Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening. Happy Shabbat. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. We're a man down today. Kirk is entertaining company at his home, but we have JB here, and I'm Craig. How are you, JB?
I'm doing good.
Good. What I'd like to do is begin with something I uncovered as I was translating today. I'm somewhere around page 35 of a new chapter of observations. I think I released chapter 12 about 3 weeks ago, and now I'm on page 35 of chapter 13. And chapter 13 is a continual investigation of Shemek, which is the Hebrew word for branch, and whether or not it is a symbol for Yosha, a symbol for Dod, a symbol for both of them, or simply a declaration from Yahweh as to whether or not he is going to transform the earth back into the conditions found in the Garden of Eden when he returns in year 6000 Yah on Yom Kippurim, and have that done by the time that he sets up camp with us on Sukkah in year 6000 Yah. So I'm pursuing that, and one of the seven or eight references to Shemek in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms is in Yirmiyah, and of all places in the 23rd chapter. And when I say of all places in the 23rd chapter, the 23rd chapter of Yirmiyah was translated about 5 years ago when I was doing an introduction to God. And for those that have some recollection of it, it is the single most overtly hostile declaration by God against religion. The entire 23rd chapter is an open declaration by God against religion and religious leaders. And so I'm not going to go over that now. We're going to go over the whole chapter in a future date on this program. But I do want to begin a couple of statements prior to where I ended up this afternoon, because it said something that I thought was rather revealing, especially for us. So I'm going to begin with the 19th verse of the 23rd chapter of Jeremiah, just so we can sneak up on it a bit. God has been disclosing his animosity towards priests, towards prophets, those who claim to speak for God, pastors, and so priests, pastors, and preachers. And he says, "Behold, the storm, the whirlwind of Yahweh's displeasure and fury, his hostility and antagonism, anger and rage, shall go forth, and a storm of destructive force will swirl down, upon the source, the very head, the top echelon of this wickedness being brought to bear as birth pangs upon them. And when it comes to destroying religious institutions and religious leaders upon his return, God is not going to be gentle. He is going to show tremendous compassion for his children by showing no compassion whatsoever to religious institutions and their leaders. He then says, Yahweh's intense hatred and anger will not be withdrawn until the point in time that he has engaged and acted upon it. And until he takes a stand on behalf of, establishes, confirms, and validates the decisions, plans, and intents of his heart and of his judgment. God is therefore telling us that he hates, that he is angry, and he is not going to change. He is not going to withdraw his anger until such point in time as he acts upon it. Now, that's a powerful statement. And that he is going to take a stand in the execution of this anger in a matter that validates his decisions, his plans, and the intent of his judgment. It's in his judgment that he should be angry and that he should show his enormous hatred for religious leaders and those institutions. You know, we've talked a lot about the fact that one of the great mistakes of the world today is this notion that hate is a problem. You know, in England there was a second Islamic terrorist attack. First at the concert for little girls. Boy, that was a big man, wasn't he? Blew himself up in a concert for little girls. And next one rammed his car into a bunch of innocent civilians, then got out of the car and started hacking people to death with a knife. And
I'm sure Allah was proud.
And the response by all of the talking heads and even the people in England is to say one love. We can't succumb to hate. Well, it's exactly the opposite. You know, the fact of the matter is that one of the greatest disconnects between God and society, especially today, is that God encourages hatred and man is opposed to it. But God is right and man is wrong.
You can't afford not to hate.
That is correct. You can't love unless you hate.
Without hate.
Yeah. For example, if we show no regard, I mean, we just flat out show no care, no concern for the victims, and we fail to protect those who will be assailed in the future when we tolerate, accept, even express love for religious and political mantras which inspire slavery, rape, pedophilia, sexual discrimination and abuse, kidnapping for ransom, mass murder, warmongering, or terrorism. Muhammad committed all of these crimes, and his Quran orders Muslims to follow his example, and they do. We ought not be embracing Islam. We ought to be despising it. That's just one illustration. The United States military is the most powerful in the history of the world, larger than every other nation combined. And it is the most often deployed, almost always making bad situations worse and leaving death and destruction in its wake. Rather than showing patriotic devotion to this killing machine, shouldn't we oppose it?
Yeah.
So what about Christianity? Yahweh refers to it as the plague of death. Isn't the destruction of billions of souls worthy of our indignation? As part of Yahweh's family, it is in our interest and his for us to reflect his values. And he understands that to love, we must hate that which is averse to those we care about, as well as that which is abusive to those who cannot stand up for themselves. But be careful. Make certain that your hate is factually derived. Be that it's directed appropriately, that it's expressed intelligently using words. And may words be the only weapons any of us ever deploy to expose and condemn that which is wrong, hateful, and misleading. We should never resort to violence, never fight fire with fire, and never use anything found in Yahweh's words or these books that we have been sharing to assault or batter any individual. Now, there's a statement in this passage I'm going to read to you next. It's the second half of Yirmiyah 23:20 that is among the most inspiring affirmations I've come across in a very long time. Yahweh foresaw and then revealed through his prophet that we would figure this out. That we would come to understand that God is opposed to religion. He said, Ba Akarath Ha Yomem, during the last days, and that would obviously include the 40 years prior to his return, Bien, close examination and careful consideration on our own initiative, without any outside influence, we would come to this realization and understand. What has remained unknown for centuries, what has remained unknown and unsaid for millennia, that God is opposed to religion. For thousands of years, men have been preaching, and the world has been led to believe that souls are saved by being religious. And now, for the first time, over that enormous chasm of time, we figured it out. We, acting on our own initiative, using nothing more than evidence and reason, came to realize that God hates religion and has never saved the religious. And we did so by thoughtfully considering his teaching on this subject. Here's God's statement in the second half of Yirmiyah 23:20. In the last days, that would be now. Anything from over the last 15 years through the next 15 years. Through careful consideration and on your own initiative, you will come to realize and understand by way of revealing discernment and thoughtfully making the relevant connections. Understand what? Well, what has he been talking about? Understand that God hates religion. Now, when I began translating Yahweh's word, I wasn't very good at it. All I brought to the table, besides the desire to learn, the willingness to devote the time, an open mind, and a predilection to go where the words led, was the ability to understand what others saw as confusing. I did so by making appropriate connections between things. I learned, in fact, we all do, through BN, by comparing and contrasting things that we observe and then making connections between things which are related. Without those connections, we can know, but we cannot understand. We may know, for example, that God is angry, but not understand why. There is no disputing that umph conveys anger. So it has been readily discernible by anyone who has bothered to read this prophecy that God is extraordinarily displeased by someone or something. But yet man's propensity to believe that religions are good, that they're godly, and that they save souls, precludes the preponderance of people from being able to distinguish the reason for his wrath. They fail to make the connection between shepherd and pastor that was presented at the beginning of Yirmiyah 23. They don't associate these adversarial prophets with the likes of Paul or Muhammad. They read priests, which Yahweh has condemned just statements previously, and don't equate those priests with Roman Catholicism. And yet there's no other viable option. There are no Jewish priests today. There haven't been any for nearly 2,000 years. Rabbinic Judaism is the only form of the religion to survive. So while Yahweh has been explicit in condemning priests and pastors and false prophets like Paul and Muhammad, no one dared accept the point that he was making. Now, bien, which is the operative verb here, it was written using the hit pael stem. You've probably done enough translation, JB, to know that that the purpose of the hit pael stem is not going to roll off your tongue.
No, that's what I got to look up.
Yeah, it's going to get looked. You know why you have to look it up? Because it's very rare.
Yeah.
It only appears like 20 or 30 times in the whole Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. You know, the most common is the call, then the hiphel, and then the piel, and then but the hiphel, when you see it, God is making an extraordinarily important and unique point. What it says is, particularly when it's used in conjunction with bien, it states that the subject, which would be you, has come to understand on his own initiative, without any outside influence or assistance. And that is precisely what happened. I have yet to hear, see, or read anything from anyone at any time that has deduced the same insights from Yahweh's word, and there have been hundreds of them that are unique to this study, including the religion, the realization that God hates religion.
Yeah, you don't hear many people promoting that one.
No. In fact, no one outside of our group.
That was a concept that was completely alien to me, and it made sense once I thought about it, but yeah, that was completely alien to me. I'd never heard anyone anywhere even remotely suggest that. God was always associated with one religion or another.
Correct. And you were not religious. Imagine, you know, the vast preponderance of the world is religious. They could not fathom that God hates religion. I mean, they think that if you're not religious, you don't know or love God. They think that by being religious, you're saved. I mean, that is the whole mindset of the preponderance of the people of the world. And even secular humanists associate religion with God. And to come to the realization that God actually hates religion, even though he is blunt about it, he's prolific in saying so, it makes total and complete sense. It has been 2,000 years since anyone came up with that conclusion. Now, as I said, we didn't come up with this understanding in a vacuum. Discovered it by closely examining and carefully considering what Yahweh inspired his prophets to write. It's something anyone, anywhere could have done. But they didn't. That Yahweh is making in this prophetic pronouncement.
You know, it's interesting, just, yeah, that's all because of that one stem, which most every translation ignores.
Yeah. I would tell you that this is powerful and affirming for us, even without this stem. But you are correct. With the stem, which every translation ignores, it's laid on a plate right in front of us. In the last days, you could have last days be either a 50-year period or a 40-year period, depending on which one of Yah's two measures of time you want to consider here. So either from 1983 to or 1993 through through 2033, in the last days. So over this very finite period of time, through this particular process, through careful consideration, now with the hit Patel stem, on your own initiative, you will come to this realization and understand by way of revealing discernment and thoughtfully making relevant connections that, in fact, that God hates religion. Now, it's why there are so few of us that have come to that. But God foresaw and declared for our benefit that we would do this. Now, the next statement plays right into that. He said, I did not send as apostles, nor dispatch as messengers, prophets, and yet they ran ahead. I did not speak as gods to them, and yet they spoke as if they were inspired. Now, I'll tell you, for those who are listening, who have not read Prophet of Doom, who have not read Questioning Paul, and who have not taken the time to study either of these two false prophets, when I tell you that there's only two people in all of human history to which this applies, do not recognize that, then I would encourage you to read both books. But the word, the verb here is shalak. It's negated. I did not send. And the Greek word apostle means to be sent out. I did not send as apostles. And shalak means I did not dispatch as a messenger. Who was claimed to be the messenger of God? Muhammad, who claimed to be an apostle and sent out as an apostle? Paul. I did not send as apostles or dispatch as messengers these prophets. Both of them are referred to as prophets. Both of them claim to be inspired by God. Both of them claim that they spoke the word of God. And God said, I did not speak to them. And yet they spoke as if they were inspired. Now you might say, oh, there's got to be somebody else. Well, why don't you, we're talking about the last days. We're talking about somebody coming to understand this through reason, through understand, through by making the proper connections, which is exactly what Prophet of Doom and Questioning Paul do, accomplish. In the last days, coming to understand that God did not send out the apostle and did not dispatch the messenger. And you consider, okay, who and because his focus is on Yisrael all through this chapter. Why don't you tell me, and whether it be Yisrael or the world at large today, what other person claiming to be the apostle of God, speaking God's word, and being dispatched as a messenger of God, has influenced 4 billion people, which is the number between the two of these, 2.5 billion for Paul, 1.5 billion for Muhammad? Is there another?
The only other one that could even possibly come to mind would be Joseph Smith, and he's really so minuscule in terms of followers. So
that is correct, and have no influence whatsoever in Israel. Yeah, you're talking about
not a big Mormon population there.
No, infinitesimally smaller. But anyway, that's an interesting affirmation that that God foresaw what we were doing and was kind enough to tell us about it. In the midst of, I want to tell you that recognizing that God is anti-religious is not my favorite of the insights that are unique to this study. You know, it's probably the most controversial, but it's not my favorite. You know, my favorite is coming to know that the covenant is a family, that there are 5 terms and conditions for participating. There's 5 benefits. Those benefits are derived through the first 4 Moed Mikre, that each of the Moed Mikre represent a certain step to us being able to live with God. I mean, there's a lot of things that I view as much more enriching and empowering than this. But if you were to isolate the insight that is most jarring to the world that we've come upon would be goddamn religion. And here in his treatise on condemning religion, and beyond that, I don't think there's anyone else in the world that's saying, no, the problem isn't that we hate. The problem is that we don't hate. And right in the midst of all of that, and in the midst of something that says, I did not send him out as an apostle. I didn't send him out as a messenger. I didn't speak to them, and yet they claimed inspiration from me, which is condemning and exposing of Paul and Muhammad. That's pretty irrefutable in terms of speaking and addressing us. So God's paying attention to what we're doing. This is a good thing. And you know, what's interesting too is that as I was writing that the commentary on that passage after translating it, just before it got there, I was explaining my personal perspective and experiences, and I was I said, you know, the first books that I wrote, yada yada, never introduced myself by name, never shared my own opinion or my own perspective because I thought they were irrelevant. And then in An Introduction to God, I'm nameless. Begin the book by saying I'm irrelevant. I don't share my opinion or my experiences anywhere. The only experience that I share in questioning Paul is that I started I explained how I started the project, and that you know, I got a third of the way through trying to justify Paul and realized that was hopeless, and went back to the beginning.
You were running a losing race.
I was running a losing race, but that's the only place I
was. You were running in vain.
I was running in vain. I was running against God. I didn't like to be in that position. But in this book, Observations, I'm all over the place. And what I was sharing is that, you know, my hero, the man that I enjoy the most, the guy that I find is the most empowering and enriching, is Dode. And if you think of Dode's Mizmor, his Psalms, they're filled with his own personal experiences, his own personal responses, his own emotions, since he was the most beloved by God. We could do a lot worse than following his example when it comes to interjecting our response, our insights, our experiences when considering Yahweh's word. Dode did, and no one was more beloved. So I was just already, you know, in the mindset of, you know, let's talk about this in first person. What does this mean? And then here they have this passage that I think is speaking directly about us. Well, we're going to turn back to Dode. I think everyone finds him fascinating. I covered a lot of First Chronicles on Observations today, and so this will just pick up where we left off. And I want to pick up with Adabri HaYomim, Words of the Time, First Chronicles 17:10. I'm going to pick up in the second half of the passage because that's really what leads to the next statement. So we know what God's talking about in context. Furthermore, I declare unambiguously before you. This is Yahweh is speaking to Nathan, addressing Dode's concern, that Dode said, hey, I got this really fancy house, and the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh is hanging out under a tent. There's something wrong with that picture. So God is talking to him about that, and God says, furthermore, I declare unambiguously before you, the house for you, Yahweh will build and establish his family. The house is for us. It's not a temple. It's not a shrine. It's a house. It's a home. And it's for us. For Dode, yes, but for all of us in the covenant. And Yahweh is going to use it to establish his family. That's the whole purpose of the covenant, is to establish his family. Then he says, now, this is going to occur at another time, when your days are fulfilled, toward the time you walk with your fathers. I will cause your offspring to rise and stand up after you, who will be from your sons. Then I will establish his kingdom. All right, now you might look at this and say, all right, he's just talking about Solomon, and it would be true of Solomon. Solomon was one of Dode's sons, and he rose up, and he did play an active role in establishing the first house on the Temple Mount. We should probably even call it the Temple Mount. It is the foundation of the house on Zion, there in on Moriah. But I suspect that this, like so many prophecies, is speaking of two different times. When Yahweh says, I'm going to build the house, because you know, the previous statement was, I'm going to build it on behalf of the family. Well, Yahweh didn't build the house during the time of Solomon. Solomon did.
Yeah.
Yahweh's going to build the house when he returns. And is it not true that since sons, by the way, was written in the plural, then Solomon would be a singular son, that sons plural from Dode would indicate the covenant's children?
Yeah.
And that he's going to establish his kingdom, you know? He could still be establishing Dode's kingdom, because he's talking to Nathan about Dode, still be establishing Dode's kingdom, but he's going to do that when he returns. You know, why would he talk about establishing Dode's kingdom while he's still reigning?
Yeah.
In fact,
he established a kingdom.
He didn't establish a kingdom for Solomon. Solomon inherited an already established kingdom. Yahweh didn't establish it for Solomon. So if you look at this the way it's written, it would be, it's prophetic mostly. There's going to be a time when Yahweh will come. He will fulfill this. And he is going to take he's going to cause Dode's offspring, children of Israel, to rise, to stand up long after he's gone. And then he's going to establish his kingdom. I think he's speaking of the last days in this case. Then it says, and this is 17:12, he shall procreate a son to approach me by building a family home, and I will establish his seat of honor for all time. All right, now, I mean, everything that we're going to read now has several layers of meaning. And this is not wholly untrue as it relates to Solomon, but JB, is there a seat of honor for Solomon that's been established for all time?
Not that I'm aware of.
Nor that I'm aware of. And since Hebrew is written so that it's always true, is the home, the family home that Solomon erected, does it still stand?
That's been gone a long time.
That has, hasn't it? And how could it be that Solomon built it and God is saying, I will establish it? Wakum in first person with Yahweh's speaker.
That makes no sense.
It doesn't, does it? So he shall procreate a son to approach me by building. Now, this is Bana La Ani. Well, Yahweh procreated a son that enables us to approach him. And he really constructed the family home based upon fulfilling the Mikra. So, you know, that would be true. So it could be speaking of Yosha here, and to a large degree, Dode was involved as Yahweh's son, enabling others to preach by helping to build the family. You can build the family without actually building the house that the family will ultimately reside in by communicating what's needed for more people to participate in it. And the seat of honor that has been established for all time, I mean, well, we all, there's two ways to look at this, or three ways maybe. The first is Yahweh has a singular seat of honor. You know what a seat of honor is, JB?
Place to sit, yeah, it's his throne, so to speak.
No, he's not worried about his throne. He doesn't. He never wants to be honored. He has a place of honor for his children. It's called the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant.
Duh.
Mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. That seat of honor. Yeah, that seat of honor is in fact everlasting. Never going to go away. That is the throne that we sit on when we sit next to Yahweh. That is the very seat that enables us to be adopted by the creator of the universe. That's the seat of honor. So that's one way to look at it. The other is, all right, Dod was king of a united Israel, one of only two rulers of a united Israel. When Yahweh returns, the first thing he's going to do is unite Israel with Yehuda. You know, following Solomon, they split apart. So the seat of honor is a seat over a unified Yisrael and Yehuda, and therefore it's the seat of Dod. So any one of those things is possible in terms of what he's talking about here, and I think all of them are probably possible. Then he says, "This is the statement that is one of I think the most powerful, because." When you understand what God is saying here, you understand who God is, what he wants, what he's offering, what he accepts and expects in return. When you listen to this, you then immediately accept Dod as the epitome of what God cares about. And if you realize that Dod was not Torah observant in the sense of Torah obedient, but Torah observant in the sense of standing, and that is what caused God to single him out, then that's something special. But this is what it says. I will be for him accordingly a father, and he will be to me, therefore, a son. And my unfailing and unwavering love, I will not withdraw, turn aside, nor remove from being with him, as I removed it and withdrew it from him who is before you. This is the summation, really, of Dod's purpose, of his message, of the covenant's purpose, of its message, of God's purpose, of his message. He didn't say, I will be God for him. I will be creator for him. I will be Lord for him. I will be king for him. I will be his biggest benefactor. No. I will be for him accordingly a father. And he will be to me, therefore, a son. That's all the creator of the universe wants. Children. A family. And when you understand that, you realize you can't get there by being religious. There is no family that has a religious devotion to, a religious doctrine regarding the relationship between parent and child. No, you love your daughter unconditionally. You don't love her if she accepts certain religious, protocol. Your daughter does not worship
not you. Unless she bows down to me 5 times a day.
There you go.
She can't do that. I don't want nothing to do with her.
There you go. It precludes the religious approach to God. It absolutely destroys the myth that God wants to be a Lord or wants to be referred to a Lord. Nobody refers to their mother or father as a Lord. You know, Dode is going to listen to this, and he's going to consider it the single greatest honor of his life. At the time, he was the richest man in the world. He had everything that a man could ever crave, desire. His home was built in the most important place on earth. And the crowning achievement of his life is for Yahweh to say, I am your father. You are my son. And my love for you is unfailing, unwavering. I will never remove it. And then we find that contrasted with the one who came before him, Shaul. And the contrast here is important because it's important to know that God didn't pick Dode because he was king, because he was important. He didn't choose to love Dode because he had power and influence. Shaul was important. Shaul was king. Shaul actually was chosen to be king by the people. Shaul was a great military leader. He was handsome. He was tall. He was appealing. But so that what that tells you is that there has to be a reason other than prominence. You know, that there's the 1.5 billion Roman Catholics out there that think that God chose the Pope. And that pastors have said, you know, they were chosen by God for this mission. No. God does not, or that a president or a king will say that they were chosen or appointed or authorized by God. God's not impressed with power, with titles, with positions, with rank. And so the reason that...
It's like you pointed out, when was God closest to Dode? When Dode was a shepherd.
Was a shepherd. Exactly. When Dode was a shepherd. In fact, God already told him, he said, where did I find you? I found you as a shepherd tending sheep in a pasture. That's where I found you. So God is pointing out here and reminding us that he isn't loving Dode and viewing Dode as his son because Dode has a position of power, because Shaul had the same position of power, and God says, no, I don't love him.
I got nothing to do with that guy.
Profound difference between the two.
Well, you know, it's the same thing with Moshe. Yeah, Moshe was raised in, you know, Pharaoh's home. Did Yahweh approach him then? No. It was after he left, and he was
powerful.
A shepherd in the desert.
That is correct.
Yeah, we know nothing about what Noah was doing. We know nothing about what Abraham was doing because it didn't matter. Their position
because they weren't leaders. They were not leaders among the people. In fact, they were set apart from the people. So you know the profession God seems to that's most appealing to God, of course, is shepherd.
Shepherd.
Yeah, shepherd. But you know this while. Well, I think God would love to find another shepherd today. You know, the fact of the matter is, there really aren't shepherds today as there were then. You know, today sheep are herded by helicopter. Today, unless you're a Bedouin someplace, today the flocks are not the shepherd does not live with the sheep. You know, they're in large pens, and they're herded on four wheelers or helicopters. So we're in a different world.
It's a very different world
than we were in at that time. Now he says, and I will stand up and present him in my home and in my realm throughout all eternity. His seat of honor shall be established forever throughout the whole of time. Now, again, Dode is the person God's talking about. He's speaking of him in third person because he's speaking to him through Nathan. Now, Dode sent Nathan and said, listen, God's with you. And you go talk to him about this. You know, I'm concerned that I've got this fancy house and that the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh is under a tent. And God said, you know, his first response was, hey, don't you know? I mean, you should know this, Dode, of all people. You should know that I never once asked anyone to build me a fancy house. Never. And that I've just gone from tent to tent. Now, what he should have said
is... kind of funny
that
it's in contrast to the churches that are constantly raising money so they can build a new, bigger, better church.
Yeah, bigger, better, fancier house of God. And God said, did I ever ask you to do that? Never. Never once does he ask us to build him a house. I mean, you think about the symbolism of it. Do you think that Yahweh's got pretty good digs in the seventh dimension in heaven? Yeah, my guess is that he's got a right nice place to live in the seventh dimension. Now, do you think that a three-dimensional creature can create an adequate house for the creator of the universe that lives in seven dimensions?
No.
No.
Not a chance.
And so, no. And so what is God trying to establish by having the Ark of the Covenant sitting under a tent when his favorite son has a really nice and fancy home? Is that, you know, I'm going to camp out with you. And I'm going to camp out with you in a temporary shelter. And I'm going to do it because it's symbolic of the fact that I am providing the way for you to be able to camp out with me for all eternity in the universe. And that's the symbolism of all of this. And I'm here for you to enable you to be part of my family. You're not here for me. Other than your company, I'm not interested in anything you have to offer. Powerful. Then he says here, you know, I will stand up and present him in my home. Well, where is Yahweh's home? It sure as heck isn't on the Temple Mount. Right now on the Temple Mount, what do you got? You've got the Dome of the Hoofyprint.
The home of
home of Satan. It's not his home. Now, Yahweh will build a home, but even then he calls it the home for his family on the summit of Mount Moriah when he returns in, what, just 17 years. So that is going to occur, but it's still a little ways off. And then we get to, where is his home? His home is in the seventh dimension, in heaven. And that's where he's going to present Dode. He says, in my realm, in my domain, throughout all eternity. Well, Yahweh's not going to have an eternal home here on earth. Earth is going to be destroyed just a little over 1,000 years from now. Climate change is finally going to do us in. The fire of Yahweh's wrath. So he says that for Yahweh to present him, and Yahweh's going to stand up and present him in his home, in his realm, for all of eternity. That's got to be in the seventh dimension. And his seat of honor shall be established forevermore throughout the whole of time. Dode's going to be the example. Dode has a special place. You're a heck of a nice guy, JB. But you're never going to be as close to Yahweh as Dode. Dode is the favorite son. He is my favorite prophet. I can see why God loves him. And all. But
I'm just glad, he's not that tough of a standard to live up to, by and large. at least in behavior.
Not on the behavior.
You're never going to get the, why can't you be more like your brother?
No, you're never going to get that. No, and that's not the reason that God loves Dode. He loves Dode because of the fact that Dode took the time, invested the energy to study Yahweh's word, and wrote about it in such a way that made the single biggest difference in helping the rest of us understand the path to God, how to be part of his family, how to observe the Torah, how to participate in the covenant, how to make the understanding of Yahweh's word personal. Make it all personal. Dode did. That's what Yahweh wants. 15th verse of 17th chapter of 1 Chronicles. And in accordance with every one of these words, and consistent with every aspect of this revealing communication regarding the relationship agreement, therefore, Nathan spoke to Dode. So Nathan was the go-between. Just as Dode speaks to us, Nathan spoke to Dode, and he was unlike Shaul. He didn't change a thing. Didn't add anything, didn't take anything away. He says, this is what God said. And didn't change a thing. That's what it's all about, to be an effective messenger. So then King Dode entered into and settled down before the presence of Yahweh. And he asked, who am I, Almighty Yahweh? And what is my home and family that you have brought me here forever? Yeah, Dode had some credentials, didn't he? King of Israel, king of Yehuda, the man that bought and owned the Temple Mount, prepared it for the Ark of the Covenant, the man who amassed all the building materials to build the house of Yahweh, the man who slayed the giant that was attacking God's people, the most prolific songwriter in ancient history, the most articulate, the most the man who wrote the most prophetic insights, the most provided the most teaching regarding who God is and what he's offering. There's, you know, if you look at, even Yeshayahu, which is a very long prophetic scroll, you add all of the Mizmor, Psalms, and all of the Proverbs that Dode wrote, and all of the statements and interactions of Dode found in Shamuel and in Chronicles and the like in Kings. There's no one who provides us with more information. So Dode had some credentials. And so what Dode is saying, even with all those credentials, is saying, why me? Who am I? Why would you do this for me? You ever wonder that? Begin to ask yourself, why me?
Holy,
I think we all have. Yeah, I think we all have. Why me? Why were we put in this position to be among the few to actually understand what you're offering and understand how to benefit from what he's offering? And we've clearly stated that Dode had a unique position. There was no one who had a more favored position with Yahweh. The answer to that question, why me? Why have you brought me here forever? Is because it's what Yahweh wanted. He wants anyone who is willing to listen to him, to understand what he is offering, to accept what he is requesting, who enjoys voyages of discovery, who likes to learn, to enjoy spending time with him, to spend eternity with him. That's why Dode. It's why you, JB, it's why me, it's why all of us. That's why he has brought us here. And for Yahuwah, once he gets to know us, it would be a tremendous burden on him for us to pass away. You know, we're sad when a loved one dies. You know, Yahuwah doesn't want to endure that. And once he really gets to know who we are, the last thing he wants us to do is for us to die. So it's in Yahuwah's interest not only to enable us to live with him as his sons and daughters forever, but to make certain that we are immortal. So there's never any suffering of loss. Then Dode says, this is kind of interesting. He says, listen, I understand. This was insignificant for your presence, God. You know, to enable a man to live forever with him and to love that man, and that's, you know, God can do, if you can make the universe, you know, that's not going to be, from our perspective, your greatest accomplishment. Certainly, making it possible for JB to be part of God's family isn't the most profound thing that God has ever done. Wasn't the most difficult
thing. The most profound thing he's ever done in my life.
That is correct. And that's, Dode realized that. But he's also saying, you know, creating the universe, conceiving life, conveying the Torah, freeing the children of Israel from slavery, providing these prophetic insights that, so that we could come to know him and trust him, conceiving and providing the covenant and its benefit. I mean, those things are the most significant. So this was insignificant, you know, little old me, from your perspective, God. And yet, you've spoken concerning the home of one in your service from this perspective of long ago and from far away, and have looked upon me akin to an explorer of the Torah. This is from Tor. One who investigates, seeking to discover information by traveling through the teaching and guidance. One who learns by gathering information and making associations. Tor. An explorer of the Torah for humankind. Ha Adam. Elevating their thinking and ascending the steps to Yahuwah Almighty. So, Dode said, yeah, this was a small thing for you. It's like lifting your little finger is actually the verb, kanton. At least from your perspective, God. And then he comes to understand why God did it. You know, the why me? I understand why me. That's what Dode is saying. You've looked upon me as an explorer of the Torah. As one who investigates, seeking to discover information by traveling through the teaching and guidance. One who learns by gathering information and making associations for the benefit of humankind. Elevating their thinking and ascending the step to Yahuwah Almighty.
You know, I love that phrase right there. And I think that's what I'm going to start referring to myself as. An explorer of the Torah. I love that.
Torah. T-O-W-R, or T-W-R in Hebrew, an explorer of the Torah.
I like that. So,
what a line. I mean, you want to know why Yahuwah loved Dode in spite of all of Dode's indiscretions? Because he was an explorer of the Torah. The Torah was given to us to be explored, to be investigated. You know, to go on this discovery of information, traveling through the teaching and guidance, to learn by gathering information and making associations. And what did Dode do with it? He didn't say, hey, wow, you know, I figured out the way to be God's son, how to participate in his covenant family, to live with him forever, to be made immortal, perfected.
All right, I'm done.
Adopted, a rich time done. That's good for me. Now, what did he do as an explorer of the Torah? He shared the map.
Continued to explore.
He published the map.
He shared it out.
He sung about the map. He provided this, every bit of what he learned to the rest of us. And you know, did Toad lose anything in the process? Of course not.
No. Gained
everything. What he did. Right, he gained a fellow explorers. And not only did he gain fellow explorers, the satisfaction of discovering something is infinitely more rewarding when you share it. I mean, that's
I just looked this up in a normal translation just to see how they translated this. Oh, my God, did they butcher this word. The King James. And has regarded me according to the estate of a man of high degree.
Wow. Well, Ken is correct. That's from Ka. But Tor is, I mean, Tor is the masculine of Torah. Tor is feminine. Yeah. Got the A-H at the end of it. But Tor is all of Torah, save it being transitioned from masculine to feminine. So Tor.
Yeah, the feminine ending of A.
Yeah, that's correct. So, you really, with Tor, beyond the fact that the word's meaning means an explorer, one investigates, seeking to discover information, and obviously because it's the masculine of Torah, it's an explorer of the Torah, one who investigates and discovers information by traveling through the teaching, which is what Torah means, and guidance. There are times when I would say that it would be impossible for somebody to understand the mind of God in English translations, and there's places where it's possible. This obviously is one of those places where it'd be impossible. I mean, there is just no way to get there. Tor is, in fact, all of the words around Tor and Torah are teaching, thinking, loving, accepting, inviting kinds of terms.
Yeah. I just looked at another translation, and it reads, "And have looked upon me as though I were an exalted man." How on earth do they get exalted?
You get exalted out of that.
I mean, I'm looking
that's the
at
point
the
point that God just made. He just made the point that, I'm, you know, that I rejected Shaul. He was the exalted man. I rejected him.
To find out information, to try and find out information, to go after information, to be caught. I mean, how do you get exalted out of that?
So you just looked it up. You know, I haven't looked it up here for months, but you just looked it up. And when you looked it up, it says to go after information.
Yeah.
To seek
explore,
out
investigate, search out, to try and find information by traveling, to try and find information through means other than ranging through a geographical area, to go after, to have certain, I mean, it's all about explore, to dig deep, to search out information. It has nothing to do with being exalted. How on earth did they come up with this?
I think it's a, the problem with the King James, of course, is that the author of the King James was, satanic.
Had no copy of the Hebrew Bible anywhere?
Well, no.
Was doing it all based on Latin?
Well, no. Well, not even, no, because the King James, of course, was a revision of a revision of a revision of a revision. At that point, it was the Bishop's Bible was the previously authorized version, it's like 95% consistent with the Bishop Bible. And, of course, the competition was the Geneva Bible. So it was a revision of those previous Bibles. Yeah. And
it wasn't
and they, of course, were derived ultimately from from the Latin Vulgate. So they were translations of the Latin Vulgate passed through, you know, the popularity of the Geneva Bible and the authorization of the Bishop Bible. And so the mistake there would have occurred somewhere along the way. And you can't blame guys like Wycliffe for this, because Wycliffe only did a part of the New Testament. So most of the early translations were New Testament. They didn't care much for the this Old Testament stuff. They didn't like the old God. You are correct that all they would have had available to them would have been really corrupt versions of the Septuagint. And in the Septuagint, the Torah is translated with nomo, nomu, and nomos, which correctly rendered is a is the means to an inheritance, is the Greek word. But because so many early Christians wanted the Torah to be put into the box that Paul put it in, that it was a law that could not be obeyed and therefore condemned, they changed the meaning of nomos to law, even though there's no basis for law in the word. And so, you know, when they see Tor, which is the masculine of Torah, I would just assume that the Latin church by this time was so horribly opposed to Yahweh and so prone to the lie of Paul that that may have been part of it. But I'll give you one other and just speaking off the top here, as to how they turned a word which means to explore, to investigate, to seek, to discover information, examine teaching and guidance, how they took a word like that, which is obviously the masculine basis for Torah, T-W-R, and turned it into an exalted individual. What was the purpose of the King James Bible? It had a singular purpose.
To give King James, or King Iams, the divine right to rule.
Correct. Because the Geneva Bible was far more popular, and the Geneva Bible put in its footnotes that apart from Dode and Solomon, there were no, and then over Yisrael, God never authorized any king to rule. Those were it. They no one beyond that, and they put that in the footnotes. So King Iams of Scotland was needed divine sanction to rule, and so the King James Bible was authorized and written, likely compiled by Sir Francis Bacon for the express purposes of legitimizing King Iams. So that brings us to why they would say that God would create an eternal throne for this man, because, well, he's exalted, because he's a man of great stature, just like old King Iams over there. That's why they did it.
Makes sense.
The church has been serving
God's
King
word
for a long time. Yeah, the church has been serving God for a long... The church has been serving man, kings, for a long time, because kings legitimize the priests. But isn't that a powerful statement? It's one of the most beautiful in the world, is that... Why did God do this? It was a little thing for God, but he did it because he looked at Dode, akin to an explorer of the Torah, for elevating humankind, their thinking and their ascending steps to Yahweh Almighty. There's nothing we can do that's more valuable than that. Nothing we can do that's more pleasing to God than that. So then Dode says, hey, what more can Dode do to contribute and testify as a witness? I mean, now Dode's gotten it. He says, oh, my goodness. That resonates. Yeah, I represent that statement. I'm good with that. So what more can Doe do to contribute and testify as a witness for you, God, as your co-worker, to manifest your glorious reward and acknowledge the significance of your manifestation of power? Your devoted and dedicated associate wants to know. Okay, so God explained it to Doe. He says, you know, I have singled you out because you're an explorer of the Torah, and you did it in a manner that elevates humankind and brings them to me. And so what does Doe say? Okay, how do I get more of that? What more can I do? I want to testify again as a witness, as your co-worker, to manifest your glorious reward and acknowledge your significance of your manifestation of power. You're a dedicated associate, wants to know. You know, Doe does a quick study. There's the answer to his question. And he says, yep. You know, and that's part of what God likes.
Yeah, let's do that some more.
That's what God likes. You know, Doe was never hesitant. Doe didn't say, you know, hey, you know, there's that big giant out there, Goliath, that kills anybody that comes near him. And no one has a chance against him. God, why don't you send somebody else? That wasn't Doe's approach. So let's go. Let's just go take care of this. Yeah, let's just go take care of this. You know, the Jebusian.
I got a lunch at 4. Let's get this done with.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You know, I got to get back to the sheep. When Doe was threatened by the Abusi that says, you know, that, you know, you'll never take over and oust us from our inner sanctum here. You know, we're on the high on the ridge, and we've got all these fortifications. Doe said, well, let me take care of that for you. I'll just stop up the water supply, and that'll be the end of that. Doe was ready to go, always ready. God likes that. Yeah, well, along with and for the benefit of your partner, your co-worker, and according to your good judgment, you have accomplished accordingly all of these great things. To make known everything that is worthy, empowering, honorable, and that fosters growth. So Doe not only said, I want to do more of it, he said, I get it. This was according to your plan, that you did this to make all of these wonderful things known. Your ability, your importance, your majesty, your trustworthiness. You wanted to make it known, yada. And so that's why we have this relationship. And Doe goes on to say, this is 1720. Yeah, well, there is no one like you. And without you, there is nothing. There is no God except you, which is consistent with every one of the steps which beneficially have given meaning to life as a result of a relationship which we have heard with our ears. You know, at a time when every nation had more gods than you could count, and gods of every possible type and nature. Gods that were men and men that were gods and gods that were half men and half god. Doe is saying, not only are you God, there is no other being like you in the universe. Not only that, you have a name, and your name is Yahweh. And without you, there is absolutely nothing. The universe ceases to exist. Life no longer exists. That's a pretty astute statement. Yahweh, there is no one like you. Without you, there is nothing. Now, here's Yahweh saying, you're going to be my son, and I'm going to be your father. And yet, Doe recognizes that, you know, the individual who made that statement is the creator of the universe. Without him, there is nothing. There is no God except you. And then he says, and that's consistent with everything you have told us all along. And look at the first statement, the etched in stone. You know, my name is Yahweh. I'm the one who led you out of slavery and the crucible of human oppression. You will not exist with any other gods in my presence. Then he says, and who is like your people? Israel, the only nation on earth that makes known the steps which beneficially give meaning to life. As a result of the relationship, the Almighty walked approaching to redeem and ransom for himself a family for the purpose of confirming your great and empowering name. And it was awesome to remove from the presence of your family, whom for the benefit of the relationship you redeemed and ransomed from the crucibles of human oppression, from the Goyim nations. So what we have now is Dode recognizing that there's more to God than God being powerful, that God being special, that God being uplifting, that God doing things that are capable of enriching and empowering. That God's entire purpose is to lift up, enrich, empower, make special his family. And his family is Yisrael. And so he's saying that, you know, all the things that make you wonderful, Yahweh, are now manifest in your family, Yisrael. And that you've chosen Yisrael to make the steps which lead to you and to the benefits of this relationship known. That you've used Yisrael to present the way that you have walked and engaged to ransom and redeem for yourself a family for the purpose of confirming your great and empowering name. Yahweh is really serious about his name. We've talked about this so many times, but if you don't know and use Yahweh's name, you do not know God. God does not know you. Yahweh is very serious.
Is there anyone you have a relationship with whose name you don't know?
No. Of course not.
Yeah, I had a few people I'd met a long time ago back in the, give you an idea, back in the BBS days of the internet, who I only knew by a handle that they chose to use online, but I still knew the name that they wanted to be known by.
Correct.
Yeah, I didn't know them as just anonymous.
Yeah. And in God's case, it's not just that, you know, to be in a relationship with him, you need to know his name. In God's case, his name defines him. His name is, he does most everything for the benefit of his name. You know, in ancient cultures like the time that Dode was writing, you were always known like it was Dode ben Yese.
Mm-hmm.
It was Yahusha ben Nun. You're always known as the son of your father. It is now Dode ben Yahweh. James, Jacob, ben Yahweh. His name is our name. It's our family name.
Yeah.
And if we're going to be part of his family, unique, unlike any other being in the universe, we need to be uniquely known by his name. And one of the things that God wanted to avoid was people calling him by generics, the Lord. Because by doing that, then you create the impression that, oh, we all worship the same God. No. There's only one Yahweh. There's only one text that points to Yahweh. You know, Yahweh used his name 7,000 times in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, so we would know who he is. So that we can engage in a relationship with him. So that we would know who Yahusha is. You know, it's Yahusha is Yahweh saves. That's why the name is so important. You know, if you know Yahweh, You know Yosha. If you don't know Yahweh, you got no clue who he was. And he says, you know, it was awesome to remove your family for the benefit of the relationship, to redeem and ransom them from the crucibles of human oppression, from the Goyim nations. So you appointed and gave to your people, Yisrael, the opportunity to be a family for the purpose of approaching you forever and ever. And you, Yahweh, shall exist as God for them. Now, what's interesting, of course, is that Yahweh did choose Yisrael. And Jacob, the second son of Abraham, grandson of Abraham, you know, that's first son was Yishak Laughter, and then Yishak gave birth to Jacob, and Jacob was ultimately renamed Yisrael. Yisrael was always the chosen people through whom the covenant promises were being made. When we become part of the covenant, we become part of Yisrael. We are individuals who engage and endure with God. Yisrael is Ish individuals, Sarah, which is the name of the wife of Abraham, which means to engage in, to endure, to be empowered by, and El is God's title. So you appointed and gave to your people as a gift, Yisrael, to be a family for the purpose of approaching you. La Ata La Am. Ad Olam, forever and ever. You know, what that says is that the second most important myth in Christianity, which is called replacement theology, that all of God's promises to Israel have been transferred to the church. Not only is there no place where God makes that statement, he consistently says that the promises that he has made to Yisrael are eternal. I mean, they can't be transferred. And you, Yahweh, shall exist as God for them. Now, that's true, and it's not true. It was true at the time Dode said it. It became not true shortly thereafter, and has been not true for the better part of 3,000 years. But it will be true again. You know, here we are in 2017, and in 2033, it'll be true again. So now, Yahweh, the word which you have beneficially spoken regarding the relationship to show the way, before and concerning your co-worker. Now, Dode is constantly presenting himself as the associate servant and co-worker of Yahweh. Why do you think that is? Why does he refer to himself as
co-worker? That's what he enjoys the most doing.
Yeah. Yahweh could have done everything on his own. He could have placed a copy of the Torah in our DNA. Didn't have to have Moshe write it. He could have gone to Egypt and just blasted Pharaoh and the Egyptians into oblivion and teleported the children of Israel right into the Promised Land. He could have built the ark for Noah. You know, he does not need to work with people to convey his message. He chooses to work with people. That's his approach. In fact, it's the prime directive. Yahweh values work. He thinks work is noble, worthwhile, valuable. He engages in work. Yeah, it's important. Yahweh engages in work. He wants to engage with those who also enjoy work. And those who work with him is the most valuable form of work of all. Now, so if you're a lazy bones and you don't like to work, you're not going to like Yahweh. Yahweh loves to work. And so being a co-worker with Yahweh is the ultimate calling.
I've had people tell me that when I talk about, you know, translating and studying and all this. I just don't have time. I don't have any interest in doing all that work. Yeah, I don't think it should be that hard to come to know God. All right. That's exactly why God has no interest in you.
Correct.
You know, God don't want to be with you because you're boring. You don't want to know.
Right. Yeah. You know, for God to say that all you need to do is get on your knees, and which is, by the way, the opposite of what he's trying to do on our behalf, and pray a sinner's prayer, and then you are saved, even though you don't know his name. You have no regard whatsoever for what he said or what he did. But you're overtly religious, which he hates. I mean, that's just, it's stupid.
But, you know, if what you want to do is sit around and watch American Idol all night, that ain't what Yahweh wants to do for eternity. And if that's what you want, then you don't want the same thing, so you don't want to be there anyways. And he don't want you there, and I don't want you there.
No. I mean, my back is still sore from the accident that I had a week ago. And, I'm bringing this program to us right now on electrical stimulation just to keep my muscles from spasming. And yet I spent most of the day today and most of the day yesterday sitting in this chair translating his testimony and writing commentary on the insights that I learned. And it was absolutely enjoyable, fun, rewarding, enriching, empowering, enlightening.
Exactly.
Totally and completely enjoyable.
Yeah, I have nothing against watching TV, playing video games. I do both occasionally. But, yeah, if that is all you have an interest in and you don't have any interest in, you know, studying the Torah, coming to know God, you know, coming to understand any of this, then that's completely different. You know, if your only interest is that.
Yeah, God wants explorers of the Torah.
Yeah.
Pretty fun.
That's why I love that term. That is like my new favorite term.
Yeah, he wants to spend time with explorers of the Torah. He gave us the Torah for it to be explored. And wants to make certain that we understand that it's that he has made it a challenge. You have to be willing to expend the energy,
invest
the effort.
The time.
Invest the
and
time.
I think invest is the best word you can use, because it is. It is
correct.
An investment.
It is an investment of time. And the result of that investment of time is the ultimate inheritance. So this is what we're dealing with here, is that it is a journey of exploration to come to know who God is, what he's offering, and what he expects in return. And it's the most rewarding journey you could possibly partake in. So this says, so now, Yahweh, the word which you have beneficially spoken regarding the relationship before and concerning your coworker and concerning his family, may it be trustworthy and true forevermore, engaging and happening in accord with what you have said. It's one of the beauties of listening to Yahweh. He does what he says. You can count on him. He's dependable. He does not change. He's not capricious. When he makes a promise, he keeps it. And so he made promises to Dod, just as he has made promises to us. And when we come to know what he said, act upon it, accept it, then we can rely on what he has promised to be trustworthy and true. And he will engage and make it happen just as he has said. I want to leave with this. We'll cover one more passage. It's not going to be part of the broadcast portion of our program. We wish you all a good night who are listening live, but for one more passage, JB, and then I'm going to go and rest my back. It is much better than it was a week ago, but it's still not healed.
Not 100%.
He says, your name will endure, verified and true, and also it will be revered as great throughout eternity. By saying Yahweh of the spiritual implements is God of Yisrael, a God for Yisrael, and the family of Dod, your implement, will be established and sustained in your presence. Dod recognized how important the name is. Now, there's a lot of people that will write us off as a cult because we are so fixated on the name Yahweh. But don't recognize that the name Yahweh is essential to our relationship. His name will endure. Once you become Jacob ben Yahweh, JB, then you endure. Verified and true. The reward of Yahweh's name is great. And it's everlasting. And he's not the God of the church, not the God of Gentiles. It's possible for a Gentile to be part of his family, but only when we are grafted into Yisrael. He's the God of Yisrael.
I would say it's not possible because once you're grafted in, you're no longer a Gentile.
That is correct. Yeah, you become Yisrael through adoption. An individual who engages and endures with God. And the family of Dod will be established and sustained in Yahweh's presence forever. And Dod is the example for us. And you might say, well, how in the world could Dod be an example? He was a scallywag. Dod is a perfect example. God loves him. God's love for him is enduring. God, he has a seat of honor. God's going to model his kingdom after the kingdom of Dod. Dod matters, and he's the example for us to follow because he is Tor, an explorer of the Torah for the benefit of all humankind. So if you want God to love you like he loves Dod, to say of you, you are my son and I am your father, the answer is something.
Be an explorer of the Torah.
Be an explorer of the Torah. And of course, Dod added one thing to that. He acknowledged that Yahweh is God, that there's no one else like him, and that his name was extraordinarily important in Yahweh. But
those are all things that you will come to know if you explore the Torah.
You don't even have to explore the Torah for more than a day, and you will know Yahweh's name and why it's important. It comes up early and often. Well, my friend, I'm going to give my back a rest. I've got this electric stimulation on it now that keeps it from spasming. It's so much. For the last 2 days, it's really made a turn for the better. But sitting down in a chair for a long period of time, that's hard on it.
I had that after I hurt my back one time moving, and I thought I'd be okay, and I went to go out with some friends, got to the place we were going, well, got halfway to the place we were going and started having back spasms.
Yep.
And so they ended up still going. You know, I was like, I don't want to ruin y'all's night. So I dropped them off, and they were going to get a ride home. I had to drive. 2 hours, well, it ended up being a 2-hour drive, should have been a 45-minute drive, but because of a car wreck and traffic, ended up being 2 hours sitting in a car seat with my back spasming, and that was miserable.
Oh. Yeah, that's the, and getting up, standing up when you've been sitting down for a while is really hard to do.
Well, I hope it feels better for you.
Yeah, it made a positive turn 2 days ago, so I know that I'm on the mend, and it's not a chronic problem, and this electric stimulation device that I bought for it is really making a tremendous difference because it just keeps the muscles relaxed. They will contract and release, but not in a spasming way with the electric stimulation. So that's helped a lot. And since I've injured my back, I've gone to bed really early. I mean, I'm going to bed at 9 to 9:30, and I'm staying in bed until 6:30 in the morning. And I'm really careful how I get in and out of bed. And so it's
you got to take care of your back. That's
taking care of it because you know what most people do when they get back pain, they go immediately to the pain meds because it's debilitating. I mean, when you twist it the wrong way once it's been injured, man, it it'll bring you to your knees in a hurry. And
I
don't want to go there.
I have a brother-in-law with chronic back problems, and he's been fighting the doctors because all they want to do is just keep giving him painkillers. He's like, no, I don't want to, you know, I hate this. You know?
Yeah.
He lost almost 150 pounds because the painkillers were making him sick. He finally got a doctor who went in and did some surgery to fix a few things, and it's been like night and day difference the last couple months, he says.
Oh, good.
But yeah, that's the go-to these days is just give them painkillers.
Right. No, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
No. I don't even want
to
try
it. It's one of those things. That's easy to get addicted to. I talked about that after I had my wreck, and you know, I spent a month where I was on painkillers all day, every day because of the legitimate need of pain, and just getting off of them, it was a force of will, having to recognize, you know, this is pain, but this is normal pain, because you go a month without feeling pain, every little pain that you feel on a normal basis is amplified because you're not used to having it, and it's quick to want to go, oh, I'm in pain, I need these. You have to tell yourself, no, this is normal pain. It's okay. I can tolerate this. And, you have to wean yourself off of them because, like I said, it's real easy for the doctors to just keep giving it to you. And if you don't,
right.
you can easily become addicted. It's one of the biggest, epidemics in America. It's part of the reason we have so many heroin addicts. We get them addicted to painkillers, which, they're all opioids.
Yes,
they are. Then you take them off of it, they go find their own.
Yeah,
but it's
and of course
those,
it's not just
to my
that they,
I can
they
see
they
why people
pain.
Get addicted to those.
Yeah, I mean there are some advantages to pain. You know when the ability to tolerate pain and to work through pain. You know, like sitting here in this chair today and doing these translations. If you can overcome it, you grow through it. I mean there's benefits of actually experiencing and dealing with pain. I haven't a single time in this process since I hurt my back lifting my granddaughter the wrong way. I haven't a single time asked God, make this pain go away.
Yeah.
It's part of maturing, of building character, and that's a positive thing for us to experience. But I think that one of the problems of the drugs, the opiate drugs, is not only do they deaden pain and therefore deaden our experience of life. They also affect our judgment. They will definitely slow
your
judgment.
Oh yeah. That was right.
And I don't want my
miserable month for my life.
Yeah. So your thinking
was
compromised during that period.
Yeah. Like I would sit down. Like I tried. I'm like I'm at home. I got nothing else to do. Yeah, I'll try and do training. I could not concentrate. Literally, the only thing I could do during that entire month was pretty much wheel myself out to the living room, sit in the chair, and watch TV because it had to be something that I did not require it.
Yeah.
Dead in your physical senses. It dead in all of you. It's miserable. But when I was off of the pain meds at that point, it really was unbearable pain. Yeah, during those first month after the wreck.
Oh, yeah, it had
to. I had to have it.
But
I wanted to get off of it as soon as I could.
Yeah, the injury was too severe. And so there are times where you have to, you need them. Otherwise, you get an injury.
They're great when you need them.
Yes. But, oh, my. Yeah, they do deaden your alertness and
everything.
And for example, to translate Yah's testimony, you really got to be alert. You've got to have your wits about you.
And, oh yeah, even if I just
I would
say
it's difficult, but it's not easy
either. Wore out. I have a hard time.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Well, I enjoyed doing this with you. Thank you for putting up with my.
Just an FYI, I'm not going to be able to make it next week. It's Patty and mine's anniversary, so we're going out for the weekend, and
okay.
So I won't be here.
Well, happy anniversary! You got grandparents to look take care of your daughter.
Sister-in-law, actually, my sister-in-law's in town staying with us, so she's going to watch her for us.
It'll
be our first night out since we've had the kid, actually.
Oh wow.
We've had a few days out, but this will be our first night away. I'm anxious to see how Patty does it. I'm anxious to see how I do it.
Yeah, we had last weekend, we had 5 days where we had our granddaughter. It was the first trip away that mom and dad had had. Now, she's almost two. She's 20 months. But they went to a wedding in Detroit, and they left our granddaughter with my wife and I and my youngest son, and we watched her for 5 straight days, and I think it was much easier for her than it was for mom and dad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the kids.
But yeah, she did great though. She had a ball. But you know, grandparents are that's the ultimate job because you're not responsible for their discipline, and you just get
all the benefits of being a parent without all the responsibility.
That is correct. That was marvelous. Yeah, it was marvelous. So we had a great time. All right, JB, say good night and enjoy your date night next week. And thank you for helping out tonight.
Oh, yeah. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Okay. Bye-bye.